Welcome to the Métis Settlement Show, Pipsqueewin, with Dave LaMouche, President of the Métis Settlements General Council, and Brenda Blyan, Vice President of the Métis Settlements General Council.
You guys are tuning in. Welcome to this week's episode of the Métis Settlements Show, Pipsqueewin. Today I am joined this week by Paul Seaman, partner at Gawling's WLG and national leader of the firm's Indigenous Law Practice Group. Paul has been advising us at the Métis Settlements General Council on our Section 35 rights claims submission to the Government of Canada, as we have been working on it since January of this year. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Tansy, Dave, thanks for having me.
I and the Vice President Blyan returned last night from Ottawa, where we had delivered the official research work to the federal government for their assessment of our Section 35 rights claim. It was, in my opinion, a history in the making moment, as our settlements have never been in this positive position to get our rights claim into the government to advance our federal self-government recognition. It's an exciting time. Paul, this is a hefty topic, so let's jump in. First, what does Section 35 of the Canadian Constitution outline, and what does it mean for us?
Well, Dave, Section 35 was added to the Canadian Constitution in 1982. So before that time, there was no legal recognition of any kind of Aboriginal rights in Canada. And what happened in 1982 is a number of leaders, First Nations leaders and Inuit leaders and Métis leaders, and there were some leaders from the Métis settlements involved in that too, I would note, ensured that the government, when they added a bunch of new rights to the Canadian Constitution under the Charter that were for individuals, you know, so for example, freedom of expression and freedom of association and equality rights and these types of things, rights under the criminal justice system to a fair trial and these types of things that go to individuals. They also added these Aboriginal rights, which of course are rights of a group or a collective. And it recognized three groups with rights under the Canadian Constitution: First Nations, Métis, and Inuit people.
Cool. Thank you for that walkthrough of Section 35, Paul. So in light of that, why was our Section 35 claim submission so critical for us to work on and submit this week?
Yeah, well, this is something I think, Dave, that has built over time. And there's always been an opportunity, I shouldn't say always, but since about the 1970s, there's been an opportunity for negotiations with the federal government on treaties and self-government agreements. There's been more recognition of this, partly since 1982, but really there was a recognition in the 1970s that more needed to be done to negotiate with Aboriginal people about rights and self-government and treaties and that kind of thing. But Métis people were always left out. And one of the reasons that Métis people were left out, or I would say the primary reason, is because the federal government has responsibility under the what's called the division of powers in the Canadian Constitution, where the responsibility for different things falls to either the provinces or the federal government. And one of the sections that's in there, so that it splits things up, you know, for example, the federal government has, you know, criminal law responsibility, immigration, you know, trademarks and copyrights mostly. And then the provincial government has other things like property and civil rights and, of course, education and healthcare and those types of things. Well, one of the items in there is Section 9124 for the federal government. And what that one says is that it covers Indians and lands reserved for the Indians. And over time, of course, that certainly means First Nations. So that the federal government has always acknowledged their responsibility to deal with First Nations on treaties and self-government and those types of things. In the 1930s, there was another case that made it clear that the Inuit were included in federal jurisdiction too. But the Métis have always been left out of this. And the answer they got really complicated things from the federal government side of things. Because they would say, well, we're not going to deal with you because you don't fall under 9124. You're not Indians. And then the response on the other side of the coin from the provinces, you know, they would say, well, go talk to the provinces. For the most part, and I know that there's an important relationship with Alberta for the Métis settlements, but for the most part, in most provinces, the answer was, well, you're Indians, you need to go talk to the provinces about treaties and self-government. So everything sort of changed in 2016 when the Daniels case was decided by the Supreme Court of Canada, and MSGC and Gift Lake Settlement were both involved in that that court case. I was quite honored to represent Gift Lake Settlement in that case. And the answer out of the Supreme Court was that First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people all have the ability or the right to approach the federal government about these types of things, like self-government and Section 35 rights. So it's been really important for us to follow along that path after the Daniels case to approach Canada and have the Métis settlements rights recognized at the federal level as well.
Holy, how can I absorb all those areas that you just covered, Paul? It's kind of lengthy. But anyways, yes, this can be a lengthy process. Now that the government of Canada has our rights claim submission, the government historians will review it all, and then it gets handed over to the Department of Justice for their assessment. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after the break. So Paul, once it goes through that process, which could take a year or so, we understand, what would happen next from your view?
Right. And Dave, maybe what I'll cover first just briefly is what the submission is. You know, if we were sitting here holding it in our hands today, or if your listeners today, the members were sitting holding it in their hands, what would it be? And as you say, Dave, it's sort of a historical report. You know, it's explaining or introducing who the settlements are to Canada. And explaining why the settlements have Section 35 rights. So it's really what it's explaining is it's going from, you know, around the area of the 1700s when fur traders and other people started coming to the West and started having marriages between themselves and First Nations people. And you started having a community forming of mixed ancestry people. Who eventually became known as the Freeman or the Métis in the area. And tracing that history all the way through the 1800s and into the 1900s and into some of these really, really important moments that the settlements have had, from the first creation of the settlements as colonies in the 1930s and all the important things that happened in the 1940s and the 1950s and into the 1960s and sort of the, I'll call it the creation of the Federation to represent the settlements, and then going into the Métis Settlements Accord with Alberta in the 1980s and the Métis Settlements Act and the legislation related to that act in 1990 and into today, and connecting the settlement members that are on the settlements today, the people listening to us today, connecting them to all of that history and introducing that history to Canada so that Canada knows, here's who we represent. Here's the history of the settlements. And it kind of gets the conversation started in terms of Section 35 rights and some of the things that we're eventually going to want to talk about with Canada. So as you say, Dave, to answer your question a little more directly, the report will go into the Canadian system. It'll be looked at likely by some historians in the Canadian system and some lawyers in the Department of Justice. They'll evaluate the report. It's always possible we could get some questions about the report. But at some point, we should hear back from Canada about starting Section 35 discussions, or as I say, perhaps some questions about the report itself. But really, the report is intended to be a foundation to get that conversation started with Canada, hopefully in the next, you know, sometime in the next year.
That's excellent. So with all having said that, why will this all matter to our settlement members to achieve this Section 35 rights claim approval?
Yeah, Dave, I mean, I think we'll probably have to wait and see exactly you know, what's on everybody's mind, and what are the topics that we need to discuss with Canada sort of as a priority. But, you know, some of the things that have come up over the years are programs and services that are available for some Indigenous people and not from others, for others, pardon me, and things like non-insured health benefits, education, and those types of things that are available, as I say, to other Indigenous people, but historically perhaps not to Métis or not to all Métis. So I think that one way that these discussions with Canada can be really useful in terms of practical impacts on people's everyday lives. These are the types of discussions that I think these negotiations will get to eventually, is how do we make sure that we're providing people with the services that they need and that other Indigenous people have access to on their own.
Thank you for that, Paul. That really put some clarity to what we're going for here with our rights, Section 35 rights claim. Once we start down the path of self-government with Canada, what are the next big steps we may have to take?
Thanks, Dave. So I'll maybe preface the answer to my question by saying that some of that is clear now and some of it is not so clear and might emerge as we go. So some of these steps that Canada requires, for example, you know, have been steps that have applied to more to the First Nations context over the years. And so standard steps that we anticipate we're going to have to take that other Métis governments that are engaged in this process have also had to take. So an example I would use is creating a constitution. I fully anticipate that we'll have to create a constitution that sets out some of the very basic agreed upon values and principles that all of the settlements can agree to regarding history and what binds you together as communities and things that are going to be the basic sort of values and laws of the land for the settlements as they continue through this process. So there'll be steps like that'll have to be taken. And those are, as I say, sort of what I would call kind of standard steps that any nation that is engaged in self-government negotiations with Canada will have to do. There are going to be some other steps that are going to be pretty specific, I anticipate, for the settlements. And a big reason for that is because the settlements are a little further along in having their own land and their own legislation in Alberta. So then the task sort of becomes looking at, for example, with the legislation, making the legislation work with the federal process and any federal legislation that's necessary. So making sure that the Alberta legislation works or jives with the federal legislation or the federal side of things. Likely there will be some changes needed to the MSA itself. So along the lines of membership and how individuals are accepted for membership and being members of more than one community at once and those types of issues that have come up from sort of time to time. And also on the issue of lands, I didn't mention this in my last answer, but there's also a desire to have the lands, the settlement lands recognized under the federal constitution and increase the protection of those lands. And they do have protection under the Alberta constitution already. But when you look at that protection, it was always anticipated that eventually one day those lands would also be protected under the Canadian constitution as opposed to just the Alberta constitution. So it's a bit of a mix of things, I think, Dave. There's going to be some things that are going to be standard items that always have to be looked at in negotiations of this type. And I think there's going to be some very special things, some very specific things that are very specific and special to the settlements that are going to have to be done that, quite frankly, I don't think I've ever had to be done before. So it's going to be a bit of an exciting time for the settlements to get into that exercise when we get there.
Absolutely. Exciting times for sure. We keep saying that even amongst ourselves. You know, this is a complex legal process we are in, and we appreciate the guidance you have provided us on this journey, Paul.
Thanks, Dave. Happy to appear today, and thanks for having me.
You bet. And thank you again, Paul. So for members out there, we will be coming out to each settlement to bring more information, answer questions, and outline next steps and more details. We will be working with our settlement councils to set up the dates for the meetings, and we will communicate those dates to our social media, through the settlements, and here on the radio show in the weeks ahead. So with that, we wish everyone listening today a great weekend. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Métis Settlement Show with Dave LaMouche, President of the Métis Settlements General Council, and Brenda Blyan, Vice President of the Métis Settlements General Council. If you have questions or feedback, visit msgc.ca/contact.